what's usually known as the graveyard shift. We've all eaten a lot and we're all half asleep. We've got one extra. We've got Charlotte, just to go through it. Howard turned up late, as ever. Joe, myself,
yeah, but it was
Kate,
fashionably late.
Fashionably late. Yeah. Johnny and Michael. And if Adam has something that he wants to say, he will shout it, because Adam is on the mixing desk at the moment. Anyway, we thought that, well, one thing that's occurred to me and Monica, actually, as we go around the country and we speak at some events, and there's a lot of sort of ministries that we speak at, it's the same people that come every time. And every year we come, it's the same people, but they're getting older. And it's just grey hairs getting greyer and greyer. And what we don't see in meetings that we go to are not many younger people coming in. And we've, and looking at our church and other churches who are part of what we believe in, which is, I'll say, biblical Christianity, there seems to be a missing generation. When we look, we don't see many people in their 30s and 40s. And that to me is a mystery. Could be part of the educational system, or you know, God has turned his back on that generation. That is a provocative thing to say, so I'm sure we'll get some post on that. But perhaps there is a newer generation, perhaps a younger generation, 20s and 30s, that seem perhaps to be a bit more alive than their predecessors, I have to say. And what do we see as our responsibility to those of us who are older, on the older side, to actually communicate to the younger generation? And I'm going to pass over to Joe, who has a sort of vision for this sort of thing, don't you?
I do, yes, as of just the last couple of weeks, really. Yeah. Because what happened is that God opened up an opportunity for me to talk to a young doctor in his early 20s. And he was desperate to know, how do you actually surrender your life to God? And he was asking all sorts of questions. And when I started probing back and finding out where he was at, it became blindingly obvious to me that actually he had no concept of the Bible. He had no understanding of the actual storyline. He didn't understand what prophecy fitted in where, what an exile was. He'd never heard of an exile. And this is a young, intelligent guy who'd grown up in a Christian family and has been in my church for 4 years. And it really struck me, and God started speaking to my heart, that actually the people coming up now in their late teens, early 20s, they're hungry for God and they don't know how to delve into the Bible. They don't have the keys that are necessary. So God was really starting to speak to me on that train journey. And then that weekend, we met with some Welsh guys. Well, they're not really Welsh, but they live in Wales. With Steve and Monica, Kate and Mike and my husband and I. We met with two guys from a Bible college in Wales. And they were talking about the move of the Spirit and about going exactly where God directs you to go in the Spirit. So again, God started compounding that kind of calling, that new calling into my heart. And then that same weekend, the Sunday night, I went to a Maranatha meeting led by Dennis Wrigley up in Manchester. And it was very interesting because that meeting was a powerhouse. They were praising, they were worshipping, they were interceding. And the main feature of the evening was that four young people had been asked to seek God about the way forward for the churches and what God is saying to the churches. And this same theme came out. And it really became obvious that, okay, the people in their 30s, 30 to 35, have actually, on the whole, not 100%, but on the whole, is my observation that they've rejected the older generations. There is a spirit of independence, and they want to do things themselves, and they don't want to listen to the older generation. And the older generation has, as a consequence, been sidelined. And there's been a fragmentation of the generations. But what God is saying now is that he wants to join it all back together and bring reconciliation to the ages. And this is not about the older people handing over the baton to the younger people coming up now. It's about a reconciliation of the generations. And the older generation have a really good understanding about the Bible. Not as, again, that's a gross generalisation, but amongst the older generations, there is an understanding about the biblical principles. And we really have to learn and seek God as to how we can communicate to the younger generations, because even guys that have grown up in Christian households don't have any concept of fundamental scriptural passages. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. They don't even know that. So we've got a blank canvas to work with. And I think this is where God is working right now.
Yeah, this is unbelievable, this young doctor. He's been in your church for 4 years.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even know the basics.
He didn't understand. He knows some things, but he didn't know what an exile was.
Yeah.
Now, how can you understand the Old Testament without knowing that there's an exile?
Is it because they just taught New Testament and not old, do you think?
Well, because I've been, I travel with leading worship, I travel a lot to different churches.
Mm.
I would say that it's actually rare to get scripture read out in church. It's rare to have a gospel message, and it's rare to have any sort of deep understanding of the scripture. And what I hear is more life coaching.
Mm.
And I don't want that anymore. I want biblical-based teaching.
Yeah.
Mm. So we've got to hear from one of the youngsters over there.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've been fortunate, or I've been shielded from being choiceless in the sort of environment where there's only churches like that. Luckily, I've been around churches that have always been biblically rooted and you know, not afraid to deal with things that might not be, might drive people away or make people question things or might people might not like or something like that.
Mm.
I definitely see a life coaching or this crossover between sort of secular, advice and things like that. Mm. Things that could possibly be a good route in to non-believers, but also, I don't know where I'm going with that.
I think that generation he's talking about is the generation when this emergent church idea came through. People like Steve Chalk and Rob Bell, they're all of... Perhaps Rob Bell, 60s, of that generation, 30s, 40s, who brought in the idea that the church must be more relevant to the world. So let's find ways.
Rick Warren would be another one, wouldn't he?
Rick Warren, perhaps. Though he's probably of our generation, but he probably has a younger... So, just trying to be trendy. And by being trendy, in some ways, there are parts of the Bible that can never be trendy. So, you know, such as... Joshua in the Old Testament could never be trendy, can he? For all the things that he got up to. So they turn their back on that or try to rationalise it away to try to create a gospel that is going to attract people from that generation. I just think somehow that the 30s and the 40s got sucked into all that, and maybe only now the young generation are saying, well, we're fed up with that. I mean... Perhaps, you know, we want to be seen as different. We don't want to be the same as the world. We want to stand out and be noticed and get back to the Bible. That's the question I got, anyway. Charlotte, you've got your testimony, because you're quite a young Christian, aren't you?
I mean, I'm 18, but I became a Christian when I was 14.
Yeah.
But I'd say, like, the sort of first 2 years of my faith, I was a Sunday Christian, basically. It's like, I was a Christian when I came to church, then when I left, I wasn't. But, yeah, so it's only really been sort of two and a half years that I've really started to grow properly in my faith.
Mm.
But, and a lot of that has come through, like, come from sort of life coaching type sermons, because it's taught me not only how to, you know, grow deeper with God, but also how to sort of live my life differently. But no, I agree that there's not enough Bible teaching, because I mean, my knowledge of the Bible isn't that great. Like, I feel like I have an understanding of God, and I have an understanding of, like, his truth and his love and that kind of thing.
You were not brought up in a Christian
family. No.
So it's all totally fresh for you, then.
Yeah, completely atheist background. Like, I didn't go to Sunday school, didn't go to like Christmas services or anything like that. Yeah. So yeah, it was all a bit weird to me at first. But
how did you come through then? Was it like a chance encounter?
Well, it was from, sorry. I had a friend from school.
You can mention names.
And I had a friend from school, Katie, and she didn't tell me she was a Christian. Mm. Like, she was like my best friend, and she never told me she went to a church. Mm. Like, she kept it really hush hush because she thought I'd like totally reject her. But and she was like one Christmas, she was like, oh, like me and a group of friends, not church. She was like, we're gonna go ice skating at Hyde Park, like Winter Wonderland. So I was like, oh yeah, cool, that sounds good, I'll come. And it wasn't until very late in the day I realised that this was a church, because I was like, this is a really weird group of friends. Like, people of all ages sort of hanging out. I was like, oh. I was like, how do you all know each other?
Only in a church.
It was a bit weird. But no, yeah, like, everyone was nice and I got on with them. And then while I was there, Ruth, who's the pastor of that church, she invited me to come to a party the next night without telling me that there was going to be a service before this party. So I was tricked quite a lot. But but I went, and like, the service was really good. Like, it was more sort of very modern worship music and stuff, and that kind of like sparked an interest in me. Like, I liked that. I thought that was cool. And like, I didn't really take much in from the talk because it didn't apply to me at the time. But I enjoyed it, and like, everyone was really nice. And I think to begin, like, and then I asked if I could come back, and I was like, Katie was like, of course you can. But I think for me at the beginning, it was very much a social thing. Like, I went because the people were nice and it was fun. And, you know, we did like games and activities and stuff like that. So I guess that's sort of why I started going to the church. But I think it wasn't until I actually started listening to stuff properly and thinking about how I could apply what these people were saying to my own life that I began to understand that this wasn't an exclusive thing. Like, this, I could have what these people had, kind of thing.
So did everything that you had in your Christian life, did it come from your church? Or were you, say, watching Christian TV or reading books? Or
It pretty much all came from the church. Yeah.
Is that the church you're at now?
Yeah, it is.
Right, cause that sounds interesting, because, I mean, I know a little bit about the church. And, Johnny, you were saying that the pastors are sort of going through a situation where they want to go a little bit deeper themselves.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, they've the last few months or maybe half a year has been a sort of a rethink, or just a pause in the desert, like a waiting and basically just putting prayer at the forefront of everything, and cutting back everything apart from a Sunday and then prayer events through the week, and sort of waiting on God, waiting on the Spirit to see where the church is going forward. But that's loads of different factors, I think. Yeah.
Because that is very much a young church, isn't it, in terms of people?
It started as a youth. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when it started about 11 years ago, and I think it's 10 years this year, actually. So, yeah, it started off with a youth church, but obviously now, all of the leadership team who were these teenagers that the church started with, are, you know, they're getting married, they're starting families, and I personally feel like, as a member of the church, that in a lot of ways, the church is sort of aging with them.
Yeah.
In the sense that it's a lot different in the way that we do church. Like, there's not a social side of it anymore, kind of thing, unless you're already there, which is something that I've sort of had concerns about, and I've like voiced those concerns to people. But I think it's getting to a point where we're sort of starting that back up again. Like, tomorrow night we're having a social event, and we just had a mission team go to Germany and stuff like that. So we're just in a place of waiting to be led rather than trying to do everything.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Because so, Joe, if you could communicate with that church, I mean, just from looking around, the average age would be the 30s, maybe, on average.
Yeah, probably youngest, like late.
So this is perhaps the sort of people you'd want to communicate with. How would you do it?
Well, we were talking earlier, a couple of things. I don't think that's not classified, your next book.
Oh, yeah, talk about my next book, yeah. That's certainly not classified.
So Steve and I were talking about this earlier, and we were talking about strategies to actually reach your generation. And the idea is that we had were a project that Dave, my husband, and I are just starting to work on now, of CDs stroke downloads of just basic biblical teaching of how do you actually read the Bible. And we're going to do a little kind of storyline of the Old Testament and the New Testament. And what resources do you need? What, how do you actually do a Bible study on a particular subject? What do you do? And we're going to make it, break it down to be really simple, but at the same time get to a good level of knowledge.
Yeah.
And so that's one idea. And then Steve's writing a book. Interestingly, he came up with completely the same idea independently.
It's called God's Blueprint. These two have read it. It'll be out in June at the conference. And the thing is, it is trying to make the Old Testament relevant. It's just going through all the books of the Old Testament. It's a small book, and it goes through every single book, but it basically summarises what they're all about in a sense of the original meaning rather than any meaning that a modern teacher may want to tease out of it. Mm-hmm. It's go back to what it originally meant. So the whole book, what does the Old Testament tell you about God, basically? That is really the central theme of the book. When you read the New Testament, you read the New Testament if you want to find out about Jesus, you know, because Jesus is all over the New Testament. But the Old Testament is really a book about God, you know, finding out how he interacts with his people and realising what he did in the Old Testament, he will still do now because he's the same God. He doesn't change. So if we can see, you know, through the stories of the Old Testament and what the prophets said, how he interacted, then you get an idea practically of what his character is and how we should be approaching him, because in many churches today, I don't think they've got a really good understanding of who God is. You get extremes. You know, one extreme is that God is sort of trivialised, and it's almost like, you know, he's just our mate sort of thing, and we can say what we like and don't have to worry about the language that we use, you know, and, you know, if we offend him, then, you know, we're sort of sorry. But, you know, when God got offended in the Old Testament, you got smitten. The ground would just disappear. He was an awesome God, and he's still an awesome God. But it's not taught. And it's only because people don't understand the Old Testament and realise that there's a holiness about God that has totally been lost because we're through over-familiarisation.
Something that I've noticed is, I don't know, I mean, I can't tell this in a historical changing of tides or something, but a lot of churches would steer away from maybe doing a series of sermons going through an Old Testament book or an Old Testament story or something, more in favour of every sermon having a mini gospel, having an element for the people that are coming to the church service who might not ever come again. Mm. There is always conscious of, who might have brought a friend, and let's make sure everything is about Jesus in a digestible sense of the gospel. Let everything sort of come back to that with a bit of life practicalities and stuff like that. So I think there's that almost risk in the mind of people saying, if we do a series on Joshua and someone comes in and we're talking about genocide or something, and, you know, it might turn people away. I think it's that not trusting, I guess. I suppose it's not trusting that God will put the right people with the right ears in the right place, that that God's Spirit is not working in people, that it's through what we say and what we do on a Sunday that is what's going to change people's hearts.
That's just interesting in that the concept of what a church is different now to how it was at the beginning, because at the beginning of the church, 2,000 years ago, a church, which is just like us, we're a church here, it was a meeting room, you know, people meeting together. They would all be Christians to start with.
It's sort of a temple analogy. Yeah. It's like the outer walls of the temple being for all nations, and the inner.
Oh, okay.
That's an analogy used.
Okay, well, this would be like the inner temple, because everyone's purpose is to build each other up, and so everything that goes on, you don't have to water it down because you know everyone there is of like minds, and we build each other up. All the evangelism went on outside the church.
Oh, right.
You know, Paul and the others would go to the synagogues, the temple area, the marketplaces. That's where, you know, they did their evangelizing, not bringing them back to the church. This is a new concept. taking people back into your building and
seeker friendly. I'm completely against seeker friendly church.
Yeah. The only way I think a church should be seeker friendly is in that a leader explains what's going on. I think that's there's a really good place for that. Say, this is actually a message in tongues, and explain what it is, and then it sets people at ease. Yeah. But apart from that, bring it on. You know, people got to be attracted to God. If the presence of God is in a meeting, they're going to be hungry for Him. They're going to want to know Him. Yep. What are we doing trying to persuade people cerebrally to join the club? Church is not a club. This is God. This is God's family.
Yeah.
I think, like, I totally agree with that. Like, I think that you shouldn't have to make God like a type of performance kind of thing. But I think at the same time, like, the church, I think, should be, like, it should be the hub of a community. And I think because of that, there needs to be an element of, like, non-Christian friendliness there. Like, where obviously, like, the ultimate goal would be to, like, the ultimate goal would be to bring people to salvation. But at the same time, it there does need to be a little bit of ease, like, a social side or a little friendlier side.
So there needs to be sort of both. There needs to be a place where you could bring non-believers.
Lengthen and strengthen,
What's all these things? What's all this? Lengthen and strengthen, what's that?
It's a gimmick.
Did you just make that up?
No.
Is that something that's said around.
Yeah,
see, these techniques, isn't it? And jargon and buzzwords. That
as opposed to turn or burn.
Yeah. No, that's what we're into. That's more like it.
But the fundamental thing is just a sense of hospitality and love, isn't it? If people are going to be loved and welcomed and made to feel welcome by being referred to, by being welcomed, explanations given, chocolate and coffee after the service, you know, these little things, they do matter. But that's just hospitality. That's just common sense. You can give it a fancy name, but it doesn't need it.
Because I think what does happen is, because we live in such a politically correct world, we make the church politically correct. You know, so the idea is not to offend anybody. But, I mean, you know, the word says, you know, the gospel is an offence. It's an offence to the wisdom of the world.
Yeah.
Their understanding, you know. That's why things like Joshua would horrify people. Yeah. And so people like Dawkins can say that, you know, sort of have this long list of horrible names of what God is, based on him coming to Scripture and not having understanding it. Because the sort of that the black and whiteness of it is to the wisdom of the world is foolishness.
So Jesus said, "Eat my flesh." That was kind of offensive to them.
Well, it certainly was. So it's a horrible word, balance, but you do have to get the balance between giving people the truth, not some diluted, you know, spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. When the sugar's probably going to kill them, so, you know, eventually the medicine kills them, if you know what I mean. But this is why we need God. If things are God-centred, you know, as Jonathan said, that we have to trust God that He will bring the right people in. If you are talking about Joshua and, you know, the conquest and, you know, some of the things that he was told to do, you'd hope the right people are there and they would hear it in the right way. You know?
I suppose we do have to be some sensitive sometimes. Like, I went to one church, they spoke in tongues at the front of the church for an hour and a half. It was like, well, what is this?
Yeah, that's...
But at the same time, we don't need to dilute what we do. There is a balance there, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's all down to our definitions of church and, you know, the sort of mixed multitude we get in churches, isn't it? Because it's not just the people who come in you offend. It's the people who are sitting there who are quite nominal or don't have a strong belief or faith in God or in the Word.